Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Please get in touch with your survivor stories or your thank you letters. You can reach us at contact@whydoyouthink.com or on Instagram at Emily_Lang_UK or whydoyouthinkpodcast. And welcome to Why Do You Think You've Got No Friends? My name is Emily Lang. I'm an actress, writer, singer, codependent returnee from rock bottom and a gratefully recovering addict. And this is the podcast where we aim to rid the shame, the highs and lows and deadly blows that ultimately led us to the lessons that we never knew we needed to learn, but are so grateful that we did. So today is a really big one. Personally, today we are touching on a subject that even to this day, when I think about it, it sears my skin and sends shivers down my spine. I've stayed away from it for a while, but my guest today, we have so much in common. So we are discussing exactly what it's like being sent away from home as a child. This may sound very specific, but I implore you to tune in. So my guest, Kat Sims, and I are discussing all this and more. Okay, so, my God, September 1992. Who doesn't remember those glory days?
Most of the people in this room, because they weren't born.
Mickey, maybe. Mickey's not ugly. September 1992. This is a really big one that we're discussing today because this is something that holds a kind of block of concrete in my soul that I haven't really discussed. And so I'm really, really, I'd say excited is the right word, but intrigued.
Trepidatious.
Synonyms.
That's going to be a lot.
But we are at this moment in the Lake District being, I'm guessing, dropped off at boarding school.
Yeah.
Being dropped off at boarding school. And in this moment, wonderful, wonderful Kat, why do you think you've got no friends? There we go.
I mean, there's nothing quite like being 11 years old and being left somewhere.
Oh God, I've
for the first time by your parents, yeah, and having them drive away. Mm-hmm. There is no doubt in my mind now, and it's taken me this long, unfortunately it's taken me this long to really figure out the impact that boarding school had on me. But it was that moment where I realised that I was on my own. Mm-hmm. You know, that nobody was going to look after me. Yeah. I mean, not that they didn't. I had lovely parents. I had lovely parents who were kind and gave me as many opportunities as they could. Boarding school, they thought, was one of those opportunities. But the reality is, it was the single most devastating thing that happened to me. And through the years, I've kind of worked out how and why that was so impactful. Mm-hmm. But it is at 11 years old. I was dropped off, and I remember being in like the school dining hall, and every new year, well, it wasn't year seven because it was a fancy school, so it was first year. We were all there, and you know, all these parents are laughing and joking, drinking champagne and coffee and all the rest of it. And we were just there, and I'm looking around, and everybody was just like wide-eyed. Like, yeah. What are we doing?
Yeah.
And I'd wanted to go to boarding school. And my dad went to boarding school. I'd always known, like, it had always been a thing I was going to go.
Do you have older siblings?
So my dad had kids from his first marriage. Right. They hadn't gone to boarding school.
Right, okay.
So I think this was dad's chance to like send a kid to boarding school. I do think there was an element of status for him. He wanted to be able to say his kids were at boarding school.
Sure.
I'd always wanted to go. It's been sold to me as like the Mallory Towers, yeah, you know, version of it.
Yeah.
And then when we got there, I was fine. They left. And then about 24 hours later, this homesickness kicked in that nobody expected. I was always the kid that did everything. I jumped off high things. I was that kid.
Yeah.
And this homesickness kicked in, and from the moment I woke up until the moment I went to sleep, I would cry. And it wasn't like I was whinging. It was like an overwhelming feeling of abandonment.
Yeah, yeah.
And I cried through every single lesson, every day, until February half term. I would leave school, I would leave classes, say I need to go to the loo. My mum would have sent me, because this is the olden days of mobile phone, she would have sent me a letter with 10 pieces sellotaped to it, hundreds of them. And I would drop a 10p piece in, I'd say I go to the loo, and then I'd run to the phone box, drop a 10p piece in, and say, call me back, because obviously that's what happened. She'd call me straight back, and I would just cry and say, you need to bring me home, you need to bring me, I hate it here, I want to come home, I don't want to do it. And they were resolute in their, like, you will stay there.
Oh my God, we've got such similar stories.
And it was February half term. And of course I had no friends, literally, because they were so sympathetic at first. But by like the fourth week of me just crying, understandably, they'd lost their patience. They were like, you know, it was just me that felt like this as well. There was, I think other people may have been homesick, maybe, but nobody had this like distress that I had.
Yeah.
And I remember February half term, I went home, and my mum said, oh, do you know what? Like, if you're not fine, we'll bring you home.
Mm.
And I went back off February half term, and I was all right.
Mm.
And at the time, I thought maybe it was because I'd been given, like, a way out. But now I think about it, I think actually it was more like I was one of those orphans in Romanian orphanages that just stopped crying. Because they knew nobody was going to come.
That's exactly it. Yeah.
That is what. And oh God, I've just given myself goosebumps.
Yeah, me too. I can feel like my whole back is gone.
And at 11, I had absolutely no idea what that was. I had been told that I was like, I needed to get over it. It was getting ridiculous now. And so when I finally stopped crying, I thought, oh, maybe I'm all right now. But actually, I think for me, that was the moment where I was like, you are entirely on your own in this world.
Yeah.
And there are people who love you. But actually, when you really need somebody, they don't come.
Yeah.
And that has been a pervasive theme throughout my life until I became sober, essentially, and sort of started to unpick all of that. But it is that feeling that when I ask for help, they don't come, which is why now I find it so hard to ask for help. People are like, why didn't you ask? I'm like, because in my experience, they don't come.
Yeah. Yeah. When you have been at like the literal point of being so vulnerable, so readily asking for help in floods of tears as a child.
Over an extended period of time.
And people have gone, nope, nope, nope.
Yeah.
We have really similar stories in this respect because, and I haven't discussed boarding school a lot because it is such, it's coming from a scene, I don't want to say scene, because it is a place of privilege, but like it's, there is this thing. I asked my mom quite right. I was like, why did you send me? And she said, it's just what we always did. And I've often described it as feeling like this ball of clay, that there was no kind of, this is good for the individual child. This is a child. This is what we have done. This child will do it.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I can't. I didn't have that, but I was so, I begged to be taken away.
Yeah.
And it was like, no. And I remember my, oh, this is tough because I know that she was trying to do what she thought was best.
Yeah, totally. And I think I'd have to say the same. Like, my parents genuinely thought, and it was, in many ways, it was an incredible opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, I was able to do things that no people who weren't at boarding school didn't have the opportunity to do, or a private school in general. But you know, I've had that conversation with my parents as well during lockdown, actually, when we were sort of allowed to sit in the garden.
Yeah.
I drove down to Devon to see them. And, you know, we'd had that time to really think about a lot of stuff that was going on. And I did. I said, you know, why did you send me? And they said the same thing. They were like, we thought it was what was best for you. Like, it was a great opportunity. And I sort of said to them, it really wasn't.
Yeah.
Like, it really damaged me in a lot of ways. And they were very open to hearing it. And they did apologise. But it took me until I was 42 to be able to sit down and say that. And also, now I've got kids. Like, my eldest is 9.
Can you imagine sending her?
She's going to be 10 in November. There is no way I can imagine sending her away.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, Mum, if you're listening, I'm really sorry. I know it sounds a bit mean. But when I was there, most of the kids there were actually army kids. That's what boarding school was originally invented for.
Yeah,
right? It was like army kids whose parents were moving around all the time, or whose parents lived really far away, or stationed wherever they were. Like, that wasn't me. I was the only child in this particular relationship. It wasn't like she had 700 children to look after. She also didn't work. So I was like, what was it that you needed? Like, was it just that you wanted me out of the way?
Yeah.
Which, don't get me wrong, I've got kids. I can also understand that as well. But it felt very... It felt like a very disproportionate decision.
Yeah.
To the reality of what our situation was.
Yeah.
Especially when I knew that as well, my, you know, my dad struggled to pay for it as well. You know, I know that there were times when he had to borrow money to pay my bills. And I was like, why was I even there? Like,
why were we doing this then?
Why were we putting everybody through this?
Yeah. Because we thought it was the right thing to do, because we'd been...
And it looked good.
And it looked good. Well, it's my greatest, say my greatest story, but like something that really puts it in a nutshell for me. And I think what you're saying about this thing of just of stopping crying, that's what I did. But it wasn't because I didn't feel it anymore. I literally shut down and went, there is, I cut that emotional tie. I don't know if you had the, we had it when we first arrived. We weren't allowed to speak to anyone from our family for like 3 weeks.
We had the same thing,
this cut connection. And you're like, and I look at that now and go, what the fuck?
How old were you when you went?
11.
Yeah.
I just turned 11. And this thing of going, oh no, they need to adjust. That's brutal. My mum dropped me off. And my school was, it was very much run by the girls. The teachers had no authority. If a teacher was mad at you, you'd be like, yeah, cool, man. But if a girl was, an older girl, your life was
miserable.
Mm-hmm. And we had this thing that the younger years, I don't know, it was similar, like, hey, Mickey Moo, this is joining the chat.
Hey, Mickey.
If they didn't speak to you, you couldn't speak to them.
Yeah.
And we were sat on these, we had to do the whole, like, saying grace and sitting down. And unless they, like, offered you the food, you couldn't ask for it. You couldn't be like, can I please have food? And so I used to be so hungry that I'd go and sit in a cupboard and eat powdered hot chocolate because I was so hungry.
Yeah.
And my mum dropped me off. And then when she was allowed to come see me a little while later, I remember it so clearly. We had this assembly hall. On one side was the first form common room. And she'd gone in there and sort of poked around and gone, has anybody seen Emily Lang? Has anyone seen Emily Lang? And they're going, no. And I came across, I walked towards the first form common room and she was walking towards me. And she got about, I don't know, a few feet away from me. And she bent down and went, have you seen Emily Lang? And she didn't recognise me.
No.
Yeah. Because I was so emaciated.
Oh,
and
God.
So just and because I'd been like you, I'd always, my mum always says, you were always the one to jump off of the thing first. You were always, I had to remember.
She'll be fine.
Yeah, she'll be fine. Climbing, once we were in a really bad storm on a ship and I had to climb up over this thing and I just like, and like did it and not even thinking about it. It was always that, I was always that child. And suddenly I was just this shell of a human.
And there's a real issue. I went to an all girls boarding school.
Yeah,
and
I think that is really,
it was crazy. Very, like, dog eat dog.
Yeah.
Like, you really had to... There were times when, you know, and I'm ashamed to say this now, but there were times when I was a bully.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
Because if you weren't, you'd be bullied.
Yeah. And I knew that. And I would walk into a classroom, there was one girl in particular, and you never knew whether you were going to get the nice version, whether she was just going to rip the shit out of you.
Yeah.
Like, really take the piss. You know, in that way that's like, oh, it's just a joke, yeah, but actually makes you feel
Oh, no, the way girls do it.
Oh, it's awful.
You'd rather be punched in the face.
I'd rather be punched in the face.
Yeah.
But it would eat away at me. And I soon realised that if I was going to survive, I had to be on her side.
Mm.
And that meant that I behaved really badly,
yeah,
to certain people.
Yeah.
And something I'm absolutely not proud of. But it's something that I've, in my sobriety, I've had to really confront and accept and make amends for.
You sell your soul. You go, I need to... You can't
it's the fucking Hunger Games.
Yeah, it's the fucking Hunger exactly Games. Exactly that the other day.
And it's sixth form. Yeah. And at the end of... When you graduate, it's like, who comes out alive?
Yeah.
And you have to fight to the death.
Yeah.
And that is how it felt. And I've constantly been on that fight or flight ever since. You know, and it's very hard. I'm hypervigilant.
Yeah, I was just going to say that hypervigilance,
yeah,
of going, walking into a room and not knowing what's going to be greeting you and going, how do I need to react? What's the best way for me to respond?
Yeah.
That and that every day, because you don't go home. It's not like at the
there's
end
no
of the
touchstone.
Day. There's no touchstone. You are there 24/7. It's at night. It is waking up. I remember there was a girl in the bunk below me in second form who told me, sorry, it's not funny.
I can't wait to hear this.
She went, I'm going to wait till you fall asleep and I'm going to kill you.
Yeah. I mean, that is...
And I believed it.
Yes, of course you do, because you are 12, yeah, and you do not have a safe adult around you.
No,
to put it all in perspective and go, she's probably not.
She's probably not going to heal. I was like, she's going, she literally went, I'm going to wait until you fall asleep. And she went, you have to fall asleep sometime.
The producer is like shaking his head. He's like, this is insane.
And he's like, oh, it makes sense.
Yes, this explains a lot. But it is, and also, I don't know if you found this, but I found that I went to boarding school at 11. My mum and dad had this beautiful house in the Yorkshire Dales, and they started a bed and breakfast. So literally the day I moved out, they changed my bedroom into a bed and breakfast room. Oh, so when I came home, I stayed in like guest rooms, essentially.
Yeah.
All my stuff was put in the loft. And ever since, I've never had any attachment to houses,
yeah,
places, anything like that. When they sold that family house, which we'd had, my grandfather built it.
Yeah.
Everybody was crying as it's just a bit like, what? I never had a space or a home, and I am expert now at making anything mine. So if I go to a hotel room, I will pack a candle and I will unpack everything and make it mine. You know, like you did with your bunk.
Yeah.
When you got your bunk, you put your new bedding on, yeah, and you put your posters up and your fairy lights and all the rest of it. You'd make that your own. But then the next time you'd be in a different bunk.
Yeah.
And so that's me. Like, I'm very transient in home is me.
Yeah. And it feels okay.
And it feels okay. Yeah. It's weird when you do start to share homes with other people. Like, my husband's like, you know, I really miss being home, and I'm like, I don't.
Yeah.
Because I can't ever allow myself to be that attached to something,
yeah,
that I then have to be away from again.
Yeah.
I can't do it. Yeah. And that's the same with my relationships as well. They for the longest time, they're very transient. Even now, it takes me a long time to really, you know, people say a lot of addicts are codependent. I am the absolute opposite.
Really?
Yeah, I don't give a shit. I want to be on my own. If I'm struggling, I isolate. I don't want to be near anybody.
Right.
I do not trust.
Yeah.
My instinct is not to trust anybody except myself.
It's so interesting that you go in that direction, because I go in the opposite direction,
yeah,
of being so convinced, because I don't trust again. But I don't trust that, like, if I don't give all of myself, that it's not going to be enough. That I need to go, I will give you everything, I will do everything for you, because then you'll accept me and I'll be okay, I'll be safe.
Well, you see, I think that doesn't work, because I also had, when I first went to boarding school, my half-brother and sister from my dad's first marriage, I was desperate to be accepted as like a full sibling there.
Yeah.
And I was close to my sister, she was 12 years older, but my brother, who was 7 years older, was very angry about the whole divorce, like, and I get it, that's fine, but he wanted nothing to do with me. So I would religiously, every single day, oh my God, my heart breaks for little me, I would write letters, because that we didn't have email,
no,
people.
Didn't have it.
We wrote letters. Yeah. I got a writing box to go to fucking school with. That's
no,
like,
I don't, because I have that too. Is.
So I wrote letters every day to my brother. Never once did I get a response.
Oh no, ow.
Not once.
Ow.
And so I suppose me reaching out, begging and trying to be everything, I knew that didn't work.
And that didn't work.
I knew that didn't work. So for me, I'm like, fine, I get it now.
Yeah.
I am on my own.
Yeah.
And it's only now I've been able to let go of that need and to recognize that I can't control people, places and things.
Yeah.
And that if he doesn't want that relationship,
yeah,
he does, and he doesn't, and he never has done.
Yeah.
So that, you know, for me, I was like, nobody.
Yeah.
I literally have no friends.
Literally. Why do you think you got no friends? Well, I can fucking tell you.
Here we go.
That it's I remember when I left, and my mum said a lot of the time, she was like, "Why don't you come home? Like, why don't you miss us?" And I was going like,
are you joking?
What do you mean? I haven't been allowed. If I missed you for the last 7 years, I'd be dead. What do you mean? I can't then suddenly go, oh, I'm back. Now I miss you again.
Yeah.
It doesn't work like that.
I haven't been allowed to miss you.
You've made a choice here.
Yeah.
I asked you to take... I'm sorry, Mum, we've had this discussion. But, like, I asked you to take me away many, many times. I was never listened to, ever. It was just like, get on with it. You're pathetic. I think the worst thing... So...
Did your siblings go as well?
And I've got two older sisters, two older brothers. So, but both my older brothers, my sister's quite a lot older, but both my brothers had gone when they were 7. I mean, that's fucked.
My dad went when he was 4.
That's fucked.
He went when he was 4, and even more so fucked was his dad was in the army, was in the RAF,
yeah.
And his mum had breast cancer, and he went when he was 4 to Hawtrey's prep, and. When his mum died, they didn't tell him until after the funeral. So there's definitely compassion in me. Like, I can definitely look at how my dad... And, you know, my dad is brilliant and I love him.
Yeah.
And I don't think he'd ever... I don't think he'd ever even consider the fact that that was trauma that has, influenced the way he's been since. But it is really... dark.
That's dark. It is. It's
a miracle to me that he is as together and kind and benevolent as he is.
Just a quick second. Was that your dad in the video who was laughing at Pooh Bum or something?
Yeah.
I watched that like 3 times and then he laughed so much.
My dad called me this morning. He was like, "You didn't tell me you'd put it on the Instagram." And I said,
"On the Instagram."
I said, "Listen, I saved it. I'm going to play it at your funeral." And he was howling with laughter again. I was like, "This is the moment." It's like, as I was filming it, I'm going, "This is going to be brilliant. It's funeral."
Yeah.
Dad's like, "That's really fucked."
It's one of the funny. I don't know, because it's how he slowly loses it.
Yeah. And it's proper like howling laughter, and he does have this like hilarious, like he's lost it laugh. But it was also this moment where my girls are looking at him. He's reading them Pooh Bum, and they're just. Delighted how amused he is.
They love how funny he finds it. It's amazing. The thing that gets its fucking fingers around my spine when I think about it is after, for those who don't know, we had these things called exeats, which were mm-hmm. when you went home for, you know, the weekend. You went on Friday, came back on a Sunday. And yeah, literally, right? Sunday. No, I can't do Sunday nights. Can't do. On a Sunday, I used to.
Did you fake being ill?
Yeah,
I used to fake being ill all the time, so I didn't have to go back.
So I didn't have to go back, yeah. And I would howl, scream to the point of like the whole village could hear it, and barricade myself in this room and go like begging. And being literally dragged out and thrown in a car. And I remember my mum going, "Aren't you embarrassed?" Age 11. And me going, and that's really stuck with me.
It's funny you mention that, because there was this thing where I was in North Yorkshire and my boarding school was in the Lake District.
Mm.
And there's quite a few kids from our area, like Harrogate, Leeds, Wetherby, around there.
Mm.
And... The parents decided that obviously driving their kids back from Exeat was just such a hassle.
Yep.
So instead, they carpooled. So they hired a minibus and they would put us all on this minibus. And I remember, you know, like when you try and put a cat in the bath and they're like that. Like, that was me trying to get me on this minibus.
Yeah.
Because in my head, I was thinking, you've got one fucking job.
Yeah.
Like, the least you can do is drive me.
Yeah.
It's 1 hour and 10 minutes.
Yeah.
You can drive me. No, that's too much trouble.
Yeah. You feel so insignificant.
Yeah. You don't belong anywhere.
It is this thing of like, your mum doesn't work. It's not like she's got a load of other kids. It's not like they're traveling around in the army. It's like, why do I not matter to you at all?
Yeah.
Why am I such a And we know, and like we keep reiterating, we know that they were doing what they thought was best.
And there's trauma there for them,
yeah,
as well.
Absolutely.
You know, I don't hold any animosity or resentment towards them for it, because, you know, there's lots of that experience in boarding school that served me well in a lot of ways.
Mm.
And I know that they did do it with good intention. And it is that kind of, you know, if they'd have brought me home, for them, that was quitting. You know, that was like, she needs to be resilient.
Yeah.
And they're not wrong. It's just a really bad way of
There are better ways to do that.
Yeah.
There are gentler ways to teach your child resilience rather than
like sending them away for 7 years.
Yeah, yeah. There are better ways. I used to, when I got a little bit older, I used to run away and go to auditions in London, which now, at the time, I was like, oh, fuck, this is really bad. Now I'm like, that's badass.
But you see, you write a lot and I write a lot. Yeah. And I think that comes from that loneliness as well, because I used to be, you know, I'd come home in the holidays and we had this massive, like, woods and river bit and all the rest of it and around the land.
Mm.
And I would take a pen and a paper and I would write poetry in the woods.
Oh, yeah, I did that.
Sit on a rock in the middle of the river and I'd write poetry. And I had binders, and I would type them up on my dad's typewriter because we didn't have computers. and I would type them up. And my typing was brilliant. And I had binders.
Yeah.
I think I went through, like, a sonnet, iambic pentameter period.
Fuck yeah.
You know, I did the whole thing. And it really, that is how I process. Even now it's how I process.
Because you didn't
have anybody to fucking talk to.
Yeah. I remember taking the Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner into the middle of the woods and reading it and being like, fuck me, this is romantic.
Yeah.
Jeez, look, if you could see me now.
No, that's it.
Look.
And it's just, it is a really, you know, it's a really difficult thing to talk about as well, because I don't ever want to demonise my parents. And I do know people that have really positive experiences at boarding school.
Mm.
You know, a friend of mine who's just sent her daughter to boarding school, and it took everything in me to not be like, oh my God. She's thriving. She's
really?
Having the best time. Like,
wow.
She really is. And I think it's because she comes from... I think if you come from a very safe, very loving family where you have that solid attachment...
Yeah.
It's probably fine. I didn't come from that family. They were fine, but they were quite distant. There was no emotional chat. We never snuggled up and, like, watched a movie. It was always... So I think that was part of the problem.
Yeah.
So I don't want to demonise anybody who sends their kids to boarding school
or whatever.
I think there was a real lack of awareness about the impact that it has.
That's exactly it. That is exactly it. I think, and you're absolutely right, there is, if you are choosing to send your child to boarding school and it works for them, brilliant. Mm-hmm. Well, that is fucking fantastic. I'm so happy for you and for them. It is... I think it comes sort of back to what I was saying about being a lump of clay and going, this will work. I will jam it into this shape and it will... come out the other side, sort of like, you know, like one of those Play-Doh pasta makers. You go, it will come out. But it doesn't work like that. If it's not working, it's okay to change it. And the thing is, there was no, and there was a lot of, we did it and we're fine, so therefore you will be too.
Yeah.
And it's like, and I now look at it and go, well, you're not fine, are you?
No.
You're not. You're
emotionally stunted.
Yeah.
You've had alcoholic periods. Like, you know, I love my parents, but they're not fine.
They're not fine.
It's not their fault. They're not of a generation where they're encouraged to, like, actually feel their feelings.
Yeah.
You know, and understand what it is. Mm. And it's, I also believe that had a heavy impact on my alcoholism as well, my addiction.
Mm.
Because it was, I became a brilliant chameleon. I was a survivor.
Absolutely.
And that meant, as much as I could walk into any room and be friends with anybody, it also meant that I knew deep in my heart, nobody really knew me.
Nobody actually
really knew me. And I was still, it just reinforced all the time, you have no friends, you're on your own.
Yeah.
Nobody likes you because actually nobody knows you. And I didn't even really know myself. I came in Spritey and people would be like, what's your favourite movie? And I was like, what's your favourite movie? What's your favourite colour? I don't know, but I like that shirt you're wearing.
Yeah.
You know, and I couldn't...
Let's stay at the same time.
For fear that they'd be like, we don't like you.
Yeah, 100%.
And it's batshit crazy
that
it took me until this age, which is why I love me, because you, like, people who come into the rooms or people who get sober and do that work early, I'm like, God, I wish I'd done that.
But it's like, I mean, mine happened literally by accident.
It was... one or the other, wasn't it? I mean, listen, you have to laugh about it now.
You really do. I say this a lot when I'm just like, some of the stories I've heard in sobriety are obviously some of the funniest things I've heard.
Some of the darkest shit. You do have to laugh. And that's sort of why I love sobriety as well, because it's the first time I can talk about this shit.
Mm.
And know that people don't go,
that's horrendous.
How dare you? You're an awful person. And they just nod and you go, I did that. Or I did worse.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm like, oh, thank God.
There's no one going, oh my God, oh fuck, wow, that's embarrassing.
But there's a whole theory as well about boarding school survivors.
Yeah.
Apparently there's a book, and I tried to buy that. It must be out of print, because I went to buy it and it was like £42 or something. I was
people from boarding school.
I don't know if I need to read about my own trauma that badly.
I was there. I know what happened.
Got the t-shirt.
Still got my school jumper and my tie. Got my free bet tie. I think becoming a chameleon is a really good way of putting it, because that's exactly what I have done. And it was only when I got sober did I in any way get to know myself, because I had no idea who I was. I had no sense of self.
Yeah.
Because for so long, you've been putting this thing going, right, what do I need to mold to that means I'm going to survive?
Because there's no individuality. It's about homogeneity. It's about making you all the same.
Yeah.
Because you're all being treated like there's no room for you to like be artistic or creative or you know, there's no privacy either, you know, there's nothing.
I mean, this is, I mean, also if this is uncomfortable, you don't have to talk about it at all. Things like sexuality at school.
Oh, there was lots of mutual masturbation shit that went on.
We had the opposite.
Oh, did you?
We had, like, if anyone found out that you'd done that, you'd be like,
So there was this thing at school, and I'd forgotten all about this. Fabulous. It's hilarious.
Let's dish it out.
But if Prince's Thunder was playing in a dormitory, you knew that there was some sexy shit going on in there.
Really?
Also, they had rooms with two baths in, and you had to bath with somebody else. You couldn't lock yourself in a room and have your own bath.
This is where these stories come from, isn't
it? So inevitably, that shit happened. Now I look back and go, it was actually quite innocent. It was very, you know, exploratory and discovery and all the rest of it.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was, I do remember Prince's Thunder, if that was playing, you stayed out in that room. That was like the boarding school version of the sock on the door handle.
That is fucking hilarious.
Yeah, I forgot all about that.
That's because for us, like, if anyone, I remember in fifth form, we went into fifth form and someone went into their room and there was a massive, there was an empty box of like some enormous dildo.
Brilliant.
And everyone was like, right, what lesbian has that?
Oh yeah, there was lots of lesbian chat. Yeah, there was. Even though all this was going on in the night, being a lesbian was the worst thing you could possibly
do. The worst thing. But any kind of like masturbation, anything like that, you would literally be burnt at the stake. You'd be burnt at the stake. However, I will tell this story because, you know what? Fuck it. And Mum, if you're listening to this, just please do.
Skip forward
a good 2 minutes. We read Birdsong in English.
Right, yeah, I can see where this is going.
Birdsong. If you haven't read Birdsong, there's a section in sort of the first like couple of chapters with the most erotic sex.
Very sexy. Between.
And I'd never seen anything. I'd never seen porn, so I was like, this is
that was your porn.
That was my porn. And we were doing it in English.
Brilliant.
Managed to
did you have an orgasm in English?
I had it in chemistry.
You didn't.
In the back, because chemistry was next.
No. Oh my God, that's brilliant.
I managed to have an orgasm in the back of chemistry.
Do you know what?
True story, everybody.
I think there's a lot to be said for erotic literature. There's a lot to be said for that. I'm not sure. You didn't sign up for this, did you, Felipe? Yeah, there is a lot to be said for that. I remember, though, talking about inappropriate things.
Yeah.
My mum would send me Virginia Andrews' Flowers in the Attic books. Which,
bloody hell.
I don't know if you know what they are, but basically...
That's incest books, isn't it?
Yeah, they're incest books.
Yeah.
Basically, I read all of them, and from first year, I was reading these books instead of doing maths. And it was about these four kids that were locked in an attic by their mean old grandma, and the older brother and sister, were bumping uglies.
Yeah.
And honestly, now I look back and I go, how was that all right?
Mm.
Still love those books, though.
Yeah.
Reread them all the other
time. The whole genre of the board genre of incest.
I think at that point she was like, listen, if she's reading and she's not whinging about coming home, just send her the fucking books.
Let's do anything.
Yeah.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I remember one of my first boyfriends when I was in fifth form, who was called Bleep Bleep, Freddie Lloyd, no last name. He had a burnt DVD of porn. Yeah. And he gave it to me. And
what kind of porn was it?
It was a threesome between a man and two women.
Of course.
Yeah, classic. I remember. God, I think I was out of the box.
No, really?
And I had it because I went to Wainside to get a theham, and then he gave me this DVD, and I came back to school, and about 14 of us sat in one room, put it in because we had laptops at that point, put it in the laptop. If literally the guys you won't know, but used to press a little button and the thing would go, and you put the DVD in, you put it in, and about 14 people, we just sat in a room, and they were all of us with our arms folded, going, huh. And I remember about 5 minutes in, a girl called went.
Have you got the giggle?
Is anyone else's fanny beating?
Oh my God, I love it. Because it's the perfect description.
Is anyone else's fanny beating?
Boom, 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 boom. Oh my God. Now I'm imagining like the flaps billowing out instead of kind of boom, boom, boom.
Like seance.
Oh my God, yeah, that flapping sound.
And we all just sat there going,
maybe that was her thing.
Really?
I mean, listen, I didn't see porn until I was in my 20s. Again, because we did not have DVDs. If you were watching porn...
We had Birdsong.
You had to... We had Birdsong, Virginia Andrews. If you were watching porn, you had to buy it on Sky. And we were never allowed Sky because my dad would never have a satellite on the house.
Hello.
No. Now he's like annoyed when he comes to my house and we don't have Sky.
I love him.
Because he watches the cricket. And... But we didn't watch anything like that. So I was like, you know, for us... I'm trying to think what we did that was naughty. I mean, apart from obviously the massive mutual masturbation, lesbian things that went on. Oh my God, we used to do things like dorm raids. Oh, we used to put like tights on your head and run in at midnight and rip everybody's duvet.
Oh, we did that.
Yeah, and then we also used to sing with a hockey stick. We used to sing with a hockey stick where you used to... Oh, sorry, I'm knocking everything over. You'd like hold it up like this and spin round, and then you have to let it go, and you would just go flying everywhere. I mean,
why?
It was such innocent fun.
Until
somebody knocked a tooth out, actually. But listen, I mean, boarding school, there were lots of times where I look back and I go, that was great. We used to sneak out.
Yeah.
Getting caught coming back from Starlight Club halfway through the window in the sixth form flat.
Did you also call it pulling a cheeky? That's what we called it.
No, what's pulling a cheeky?
Pulling a cheeky.
Oh, pulling a cheeky.
Yeah. When you went, so basically, we're boarding school because we're all flight risks. You have to sign in about 10 times
a
day.
You have to sign in.
You got to sign in a lot. And we'd go at like 6 o'clock, go to the house mother and go, I'm feeling really tired, so I'm going to go, that's how we spoke, I'm going to go to bed early.
And like the Windsor version of a Valley Girl.
Yeah. I'm really tired. It's like one long vocal fry. And then we, in the drama department, there was a room that had some quotes on the walls and a box of costumes. and they had these god-awful wigs that like someone would like have to stick on their head. And we'd get these wigs out of the costume department, put them on the pillow, make a little person in the bed, so if the house mother came around, they'd be like, oh, of course.
Weird. That's stupid.
They are idiots.
Our doors in the sick form, we were given flats. It was quite cool.
Oh, wow. Flats.
But the door used to, obviously, if you open the door after lights out,
yeah,
like 17 at this point, an alarm would go off. Right?
We had stopped having lights out at 15.
So what we realised really quickly early on is that if you unscrewed the metal plate on one side of the door and sellotaped it to the other plate, you could get in and out without breaking the circuit.
Easy, easy.
At that point, I don't think I spent many nights in the flat. Like, I was just out all the time. Okay. Even though I was just around the... Like, I was just around, walking around the fucking camper. I just didn't want to be where I was supposed to be.
That's what we did. We just went around. But we'd put these wigs in the bed and then we'd literally get out the window, go down. My school was in Ascot. We used to go to London for the night.
Nice.
Come back in the morning. Someone would sign you in at breakfast.
Oh my god, we used to go to Windermere for the night.
Nice.
There was a club called Starlight.
Fuck yeah.
It was great. And then I went for my 18th birthday.
To Starlight?
And he was like, I'm celebrating my 18th birthday. He's like, you've been coming here for 5 years. He's like, how are you 18? Can I have a Malibu and come?
I'm 18 now. That's fine. we used to just sort of, I always used to just like wander around the school. The thing is with boarding school, you do like, because you have to be quite savvy and you do have to, like, there's a lot of times that are really boring. So you do come up with shit that's weird, like the hockey stick thing. We used to hoard hot cross buns so they go stale and then we'd hurl them at parents' evening.
Do you know, you say that, we never had any time to get bored. In fact, now I eat so fast, I don't know if you eat quickly.
If you don't eat quickly, you don't eat.
Wolf food down, because there was part of their, like, sort of torture was you were never allowed any downtime. Because if you had downtime, you were going to get up something naughty because you're so fucking traumatised, you were going to act out.
Yeah.
So you'd get up at ridiculous o'clock, you'd like whiz in, have breakfast, then you'd have to go straight to do this, all your classes. Lunch, you'd have like 5 minutes to run into the canteen, get some food, because then you had a lunch club or something. Then you had prep, then you had dinner, but then you had so you were never ever still.
Yeah.
And now I struggle to sit down. Yeah. I eat really fast. Yeah. I always have to be on the move. I hate not having anything.
Yeah.
Stimulating me in any way, whether it's a podcast or TV or music's no good for me.
Music doesn't work for me.
No, I need something more.
I need like human. What I need, some human. People go, oh, listen to music when you go to sleep. I'm like, I'd rather die. Yeah. I can't.
I listen to death podcasts to go to sleep. I've got Dateline on. Keith Morrison, he's my favourite.
We are so similar.
It's all boarding school. I tell you what, it's boarding school. Fucks you up in all the same ways. Yeah. But yeah, I really struggle with any downtime.
Yeah.
I say that, I'm either like in fifth gear or park.
Yeah.
Like, those are my only options.
Oh, it's one or the other.
Yeah.
You literally, there is no kind of like, if people go, just like cool down and like, just take it easy. I'm like, I don't know what that means.
Yeah.
I can't do that.
Yeah.
There were times that were wild and bonkers, but I think the main things that really, really fucked me up were the early years. That's like, that's when you are not ruling the school and you're not in any kind of control.
You're totally vulnerable.
Yeah.
You are hoping that you don't look at anybody in the wrong way or, you are constant, like, fight or flight mode. Yeah. You are, because you know that there is no adult that can be watching you at any one time. You don't have a safe space to go back to.
Yeah.
Even if you tell your friends that something happened, they'll probably be like, well, if I'm her friend, then I'll get bullied. So instead, I'm just going to tell her that it's all her fault.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it was relentless. It was the Hunger Games. And
catching eyes with someone in chapel in an older year, my God, wait for the crucifixion.
And they just, they were mean.
Yeah,
and then we were mean when we got older as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was just, and I hate everything about that. But I was thinking about the good things that it did for me. Like, it did give me a massive sense of curiosity. Like, I did always want to, because I had no desire to stay at home.
Mm.
I always wanted to travel.
Mm.
I don't think I ever would have got that. I mean, I went to Australia on exchange when I was 13 for a term. You know, people were like, you just put your kid on a flight for 24 hours. And I was like, yeah, by this point, I was dead inside. I'm like,
yeah,
it's fine.
Yeah, yeah, literally, that was exactly it. Just dead inside. I got sent everywhere. When I was 17, I spent, I think, like 12 hours alone in Nairobi on my own with a rucksack. And I was like, totally fine. Like, no one gave a shit.
Yeah. And there is that sense of, like, I'm glad that it was a pretty brutal way to get it, but I do have a real sense of independence and resilience.
Mm.
And I know you're right. You said at the beginning, it sounds a bit like, oh, you went to boarding school, hard life, and you're privileged and all the rest of it. I sort of, and I get that, But I can't tell you how devastating it is. It's a really expensive way to traumatise your children.
Oh my God.
Do you know what I mean? Like, you could have done this on a budget.
You could have done this in a way easier.
All of this stuff, and I think people go to private school because they get loads of opportunities, they get to do all this, that and the other. I'm like, yeah, but if I don't send them to private school, then I can afford to do that with my own kids.
Yeah.
Like, but there is still part of me that, like, struggles with that. Like, there's still part of me that is bred to believe that private school is better.
Yeah.
And I do struggle with that because I have to be like, it's not better.
It's not better.
It's not better. Like, and it's difficult, but yeah, boarding school's a weird one. And I don't think it's ever anything that I couldn't even ever imagine sending my kids away.
I can't.
I say to them, even if you go to university, I'm like, you're going to live with me. You're going to live with me forever. Or next door.
I can't imagine the idea of sending Mickey, my cat, to a cattery for a week. I'm like, well, that's impossible, isn't it? I'll have to cancel my holiday.
Oh no, for a week I'm fine.
Oh no,
tell you, cats different, but when you do have kids, this is the thing, I do actually fully empathise with the desire to have them not be with you.
Yeah.
Like, there is that. I love my kids, but I was talking to a school friend, a dad actually, yesterday, and he's like, oh, our kids are going with their grandparents camping for 2.5 weeks during the summer holidays. And I was like, I don't think I've ever felt jealousy like that. It was seething. Like, I had to sort of step ten it because I felt such resentment towards it. Because my kids' grandparents are way too old. They can't do it. There's no way we'd get that kind of childcare. I was like, what are you going to do for 2.5 weeks? Like, oh, we've booked to go to Tuscany. I was like,
what?
You're going to have to get out of my reach because I swear I'm going to stab you in the face.
You need to walk away from me.
Yeah, like 2.5 weeks away, fine.
Yeah.
Sending them away from 11 to 18.
Yeah.
Not okay.
I've got nieces and nephews. My niece, Isabel, is 4. And when I first met her, my brother said it was so weird because you leant over her when she was newborn and went, I will die for you. And he was like, it's not that you said I would, it's that you went, I will. And
like a prophecy.
I will die for you. And that's weird. But, like, the idea of, like, they discussed it the other day, and I jumped on the I mean, obviously, what the fuck? I have nothing to do with it. I've got no right to jump in, but I was...
Oh, the boarding school conversation.
But I was like, okay, I'll take her. I'll take her. And they were like, wait, I was like, I don't know. I'm like, well, I'll teach her.
Yeah.
I was like, the idea of her being, like, I can't, I...
Do you think they will send her?
I fucking hope not. No, I don't think so.
I think it's far less popular now than it was then. I also think it's...
Boomers were like...
The boomers. Well, they also had loads of money.
They had so much money.
They bought a house for 3p and they, you know, and had pensions coming out of their yin-yangs.
Yeah.
You know, like, they just had money to fucking burn.
It's a golden generation. They all did it. They were fine. And then... Oh,
and ruined it for the rest of us.
Yeah.
But now I think it's... You know, it's so freaking expensive.
Yeah.
Like, there's better things to spend your money on.
Yeah.
Fucking fabulous holidays.
Yeah.
You know, you could buy, like, a whole second house.
Yeah.
Third house.
I know, like, if I have kids, and I don't know if that will be a thing, as I said to Brandon Reese, I need to get myself a boyfriend so I've got somewhere to go at Christmas. And he was like, you stop saying, get yourself a boyfriend.
God, you can come to my house.
Can I come to your house? Yeah. I think the girls would like that because we can hang out.
Oh my God, the girls would love that.
Hang out and have someone.
It'd be amazing.
I know that I would never want to send them to boarding school, and I don't think I'd send them to private.
I also want those fights. Like, I want to have fights about boyfriends and sneaking out and being late and not coming home and doing your homework. And you know, I know I don't have teenagers yet, and I know that Dieter is like, just you wait.
It's the
fucking worst. But I want that because I never had that.
Yes, exactly.
I never had that. Like, you know, those TV shows you see of, like, teenagers being mad with their mums.
Yeah.
Sounds ridiculous, but I never had that experience.
Yeah, ever.
And that, for me, just was like, it's such a loss because I think that's such a bond that you get with your mum through that period.
Yeah.
I feel like I missed out on that.
And the same way with things
family,
like,
thing,
I don't know, TV shows and stuff, like, all my friends were like, oh my God, when you came home from school and got to watch Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and I was like, we had
anything like that.
No, we
were allowed to watch Friends.
Were you?
We were given like a special dispensation for us all to watch Friends.
We were allowed to watch Skins.
Oh, were you? That's spicy.
Yeah, it's very spicy. We were allowed to watch, I think it was like a Thursday night that Skins was on. We were allowed to watch Skins.
Oh my God, that's incredible.
But yeah, it was pretty sick. I ran away from school.
Do you know, at sixth form, I just remembered I became a weekly boarder.
Did you?
Yeah, because I passed my driving test. That was the only reason. Mum and Dad were like, we're not driving up and down to get you, but if you can drive yourself.
Sick.
So I became a weekly boarder, but by then I had a boyfriend who lived in the same village. He was really fit.
But he was fucking fit.
Oh my God, he was so fit. He was. Like, we were the only two people our age.
You
so
like
thank
the
God.
Legs of the leg
thank God he fancied me. Yorkshire Dales, because this was at home. And he was like 6'4", he was a basketball player. He was like legit fit.
Like, yeah.
Even now, I'm like, please don't be listening to this.
Imagine he's my number one.
Even now, occasionally, he pops up on my Instagram feed and I'm like, fuck, he was fit.
Fuck, he's fit.
Like, he is objectively good looking.
Yeah.
And thank God we fancied each other.
Anyways, he's single?
I think he might be, actually.
He's only 10 years older. I date the older.
He's got a little girl. Not that little, probably the same age as Billy.
Okay.
Like 9 or 10.
I just feel like if I was like...
He lives in the Yorkshire Dales. It's not... I mean, he's... I'll show you a picture.
What would I do with Miggy?
Already, she's like, so I'm moving to the Yorkshire
Dales. It's a grand girl move.
But yeah, but and to be honest, when I think about it, that was my family. Like, I absorbed... Like, I was... We were all in each other's... Like, that was the only person I spent any time with.
Yeah.
And when that breakup happened...
Oh, that was been devastating.
Absolutely devastating. Yeah. Because he was the only person that I had.
Yeah.
In my entire life.
Yeah.
That I had any connection to.
Yeah.
So it really fucked me up in relationships as well.
Well, I was going to discuss this. I think, you know...
Are we running out of time?
No, we're good. That my... I think my experience at boarding school really played into a lot of relationship choices that I made.
Yeah.
Because when I was... I definitely survived boarding school, and I survived by doing the same, by being this chameleon.
Mm-hmm.
And I was part of this like cool group, but I was on very much like, they didn't care if I was there, they didn't care if I wasn't.
Yeah.
It was like I was made
out of
plastic.
Of course they didn't, because they're the same as you.
Yeah.
They don't care about anybody else.
They know
that they only have to look after themselves.
Yeah. I wasn't this like superlative of like the most or the worst. Like, it wasn't like, no, she can't be here. It was just like, if I was there, cool. If
below
I was,
the radar.
No one would ask where I was. And when I left school and had my first like serious boyfriend, who I met when I was 17, he was the first person in my actually I've just talked about this in the most recent episode. He was the first person in my entire ever in my life who turned around to me and went, I love you, you are, but this is what he did. It was like this thing going, I love you, are pedestal. And suddenly I was like, oh my God, I exist as a human,
but only in relation to him.
And then when he switched and became very, very abusive, very physically and emotionally abusive, I was like, I can't leave this, because if I do, I'm not going to exist anymore. I'm going to go back to being nothing. And that really played a huge part in a lot of my relationships.
I think as well, it's really important to like distinguish between this idea of, because trauma is at the root of everything, right?
Yeah.
All our bad decisions generally come from some sort of trauma that's been unprocessed.
Mm.
But trauma... it doesn't always have to be like capital T trauma. Like,
yeah.
One of those defining moments that I find traumatic that I know of was being pushed onto that minibus.
Yeah.
Now, nobody's looking at that.
Trying to get Mickey in his rucksack.
You know, I wasn't mugged, I wasn't raped, I wasn't attacked, I wasn't any of that stuff at that point. But that for me was trauma with a little T, but enough to really have this lasting impression.
Yeah.
That really meant that it changed my world view in some way.
Yeah.
And without acknowledging that, I just kept making these same mistakes, like really being whoever any boyfriend needed me to be.
Exactly.
So when I was with the really fit bloke, he was really into like college rock. To be fair, I still am. I mean, I've never met a Counting Crows album I didn't love. but like Counting Crows, Hootie and the Blowfish, Matchbox fucking 20.
Yeah.
All of this stuff. So that was me. And he was a writer, so I was writing.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I went out with a skier, so then I was a skier.
Yeah.
I did that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, this, that and the other and blah, blah, blah. And I was always what they needed me to be.
100%.
And
you convince yourself. If there's no part of you that's going like, oh, I don't like this, you literally convince yourself to go, oh, no, I do like this.
Yeah.
I fucking hate camping. Guys, I'm sorry, I hate it. My personal hell, if hell is catered to the individual, I'll be constantly camping and I'll be an accountant. That is my hell.
Oh, I love camping.
I don't know what it is.
No, I get it.
I can't.
I mean, it's an acquired taste.
It is one of my, like, big hates.
What is it that you hate so much about camping?
I don't like being cold in the morning or feeling like my, like, I don't know where the toothpaste is. I just, like,
oh, I see,
I'm
yeah.
sure if it's a, or if there's, like, hot water available, or feeling like I just don't like it. And I had my ex, like, his favourite thing in the world was camping.
Did you go camping all the time?
We didn't go camping, but I definitely expressed how much I loved camping. I actively hate it. I know that I hate it.
That's so funny.
Isn't that, like, why? And then, but I there was no part of me going, I'm lying. It was going, oh no, I do love it.
Yeah. That's the thing. It's not a choice. I mean, it's not a choice. It's an instinct.
Yeah.
It's like a survival instinct where it's like, I will be liked and accepted and I will exist if this person recognises me. And if he recognises me, it's because I like all the same things that he likes.
Yeah. I'm perfect.
And I've done it with friends as well, with girlfriends too. You know, I've dressed a certain way. Yeah. I've said I'll do, you know, I mean, I remember one friend who was really crunchy as a parent, which is fine. It's just not my vibe. But she was like, we don't do vaccinations, the rest of it. And, like, I'm so anti-vax.
Mm.
But I was like, yeah, we'll give them colloidal silver instead. Like, what the fuck? Do you know what I mean? I was like,
yeah, no,
I don't. Then we weren't friends anymore. And I was like, get these kids immunised.
Yeah.
And now I pay for extra vaccination. I'm like, chicken pox.
Yeah.
As well.
Woohoo!
You know, but it is those things. And it makes my heart break because even now I have to, like, my instinct is to do it, but I have to stop.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, I guess, again, sobriety's taught me that I have to lean into that pause and go, listen.
Yeah.
Don't, but I do things like they go, oh, you know that new restaurant down on that, right? And I'd be like, yeah, I do. No idea.
Oh, yeah.
I have no idea what restaurant they're talking about.
Yeah.
I've never heard an album they're talking about, but I will say, yeah, I know it. Yeah, it's brilliant.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to go. No.
Yeah. We talked about this, actually, I think, before. We talked about, like, life pre-sobriety and how if, because we did this thing, like, if we made a mistake of some sort, we come up with, like, a lie.
Throw anybody under the bus.
And, like, go, no, that wasn't my fault because of this, rather than doing, because you cannot be like, I fucked up.
Because a lot of, as well, when I, my parents' generation, a lot of love and attention was shown via achievement. So when I achieved, like, got gold medals or great grades or whatever, that was when I felt the most noticed.
Yeah.
So the idea of me failing in any way, like if I fuck up at work or something, pre-sobriety, I would throw anybody under the bus. I could not take accountability. Not because I was mean and malicious, but because the fear in me that I would be rejected was palpable.
Yeah.
But again, I didn't recognise it as that until I went through sobriety.
Yeah.
I used to think, it just wasn't my fault.
And it goes on, like, a huge scale. It goes from, like, a fuck-up at work to going, someone's asked you to get Ribena at a corner shop and you've got Ribena and then you go, oh, there wasn't any.
Yes.
Like,
oh, my God, yes.
Like, it's that.
Oh, my gosh, you have done that.
Yeah, going, you forgot. That's okay. Yeah. But you literally go, oh, that damn shop.
No,
they stopped.
Yeah. Or you'll go, oh, you know, sorry, I haven't replied to your email. It was in my drafts.
Yeah.
I just didn't do it.
No, I literally just didn't do it.
But I can't bear the thought that somebody thinks I'm useless or something, or that I fucked up.
Yeah.
And now I do tell the truth, and I'm really sorry. But I have to make myself.
It's
my instinct is to lie.
Yeah, 100%. I have to take the pause and go, no, it's okay.
Yeah, you fucked up, but it's fine.
Also, to go, like, if I forget to reply to a voice note or something, my instinct is to be like, I've been so slammed with work and I've done that. And it's like, no, I just, like, I was quite tired and needed some space myself. And actually, I didn't really want to listen to your voice note. And most people are like, that's cool, man, I do that too.
Do you know, I've got the best group of friends, and it's taken me to my 40s to sort of figure this out, but I've got friends now, not very many. But they are, the ones I've got are really, really good.
Yeah.
And they'll do things like they'll drop voice notes and they'll be like, listen, just checking, say hi. Do not want to be another thing on your to-do list. So don't worry about getting back to me whenever is fine. But just letting you know I'm thinking of you. I'm like, that's the kind of friendship I need in my life.
That's exactly it.
That's what I need. This recognition that I don't always have to be available.
Yeah.
And that I don't expect them to always be available. I never get upset, partly because I don't ever attach myself to anybody and I assume nobody's ever coming anyway or replying to anything I read or write. But I never get annoyed when people don't reply.
No.
I never go, oh, that means that I'm terrible. I just go, that's what people do. They don't ever get back to me.
And if people apologise for not getting back, I'm like, it's totally fine, man. Like, it's totally, totally fine.
Yeah.
And it is the friendships that I've now discovered of going, you're not paying any kind of penance. You're just going, like, love you, sending you much love today.
Yeah.
All good.
It's not a competition.
It's and that relief of
When anybody's like, oh my god, you haven't replied to me.
Yeah.
I just think you're not my people.
You're not my people, man.
Like, and that's fine.
Yeah, it's totally
but
okay.
Your expectations of friendship are way different to mine.
What, you haven't seen me in 2 weeks. I don't see most of my friends in
two weeks. We see sporadically, we're in touch whenever we can be. But if I call them and say I fucking need you, they'll be there.
Oh, without question.
I mean, I never would, obviously, because I'm an addict and I don't like asking for help and I'm really fucked up in that way. But if I did, they would. And that's all I need to know. I don't need to know that they're going to respond to my text message straight away.
Yeah.
I just need to know that if the shit hits the fan, somebody will come.
That's like my best friend who saved my life. He legitimately saved my life. And we see each other on reg. He works a lot. He's a very successful actor. But he works a lot and he's not around a lot. That's okay. He often doesn't get back to me. But there was that day when I went, I need you now. And he was like, I am coming. I am coming. And he dropped everything. He stayed with me until I was taken away.
Yeah.
They should take away.
And that's, you know, that's what it's about. Mm. It's not about whether they get back to you in a certain amount of minutes.
Yeah.
I'm too ADHD for that.
So at this point, I like to ask, what are the things about you, with all of this stuff that's happening, what are the particular things about you that you genuinely really love and cherish about you as a person?
This is really uncomfortable.
I know, everyone hates it. I know, it's the prank.
And do you know what? I make my girls do this.
Do you?
Like, all the time, like, tell me what you love about yourself.
Oh.
And they're like, I really love my long legs.
I love that.
I really love that I can throw a ball far. I'm like, oh God, I wish I could do that. You know, without any kind of self-consciousness.
Yeah.
Okay, here goes. I like that I'm silly. I do like that I dance in the kitchen with my kids and they hate it, but I love that, my silliness.
Yeah.
How many do I have to come up with?
No, like, you can come up with one or 10.
It's not going to be 10. I really love my ability to sleep now.
That's great.
Do you know, I never used to be able to sleep.
Yeah.
And I love that I get into bed and I can fall asleep, and that is...
Is that part of sobriety?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The sleep I discovered when I didn't drink, I was like, do you mean everybody else has been having this kind of sleep their whole life?
Yeah.
And I haven't. I thought, well, you watched that name and you just woke up 4 times a night.
Yeah, 100%.
But that's the wine, apparently. And now I just sleep, and probably the drugs.
Actually,
if I'm honest.
Crazy.
But yeah, and also I really love my ability to be able to... I do not hold a grudge. Mm. I never have held a grudge.
I love that.
And I am very able to just be like, okay, fine, done.
That's such a good one.
I do not hold a grudge. And for me, that has served me well and the people around me well in life. And, you know, and I think that's something, I'm proud of that.
I love those. That's a really good one. That's a really, really good one. I like that a lot.
Did I like win?
You won. You won that bit.
I'm not competitive at all.
You
I'm really competitive.
And there's a portion of the podcast that we like to call thank you letters, where we ask you to express gratitude for a person, a place, or a thing, or one of each that you're particularly thankful for.
Oh, I love this. I'm going to say people, my kids.
I know. I knew you were going to say that, and I can actually feel tears springing to my eyes, which is nice.
I almost didn't say it, because I thought it was really cheesy.
No, it's great.
But also, it's quite unusual coming from me, because, you know, I'm more likely to call them rat bags than say I love them. They, honestly, I'm sober because of them, and they bring me... They are the funniest fuckers I know.
Mm.
They really are. places. Do you know what? I would say my house, because for the first time in my entire life, I feel like I actually have a base that I love.
Yeah.
And things, my puppy. Does she count as a thing?
1000%.
My little sausage dog, Daxie, called Noodle. Or Noodle. Or Michael Noodle.
Noodle.
Or Mike.
Do you know what his full name is?
Please say it's Michael Noodle.
It's Michael Catley.
Oh my God. I've got Michael Noodle. Oh,
that's why we're friends.
That's why we're friends. She's also called Nulehi.
I love.
Yeah, we've got many names for her, but she's my favourite.
I love that. Perfect, perfect ones. And is there anything you can discuss, or is it all super chic?
Well, I'm writing two books, which is very exciting. I've got a novel coming out and a non-fiction, but it's way too early to start promoting that. Mm. But do you know what? The weirdest success story was this list I wrote called the Mental Load List. And if you might not, if you're a mum with kids and you're a woman, you will fully understand what I'm talking about. But that kind of constant ticker tape that goes on in your head that your partners don't seem to suffer from.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like this thing where you're like, why is it that I just know that dentist appointments need making, or that birthday presents need buying, or that beds need changing, or that, you know, this sort of stuff. I wrote a list where I listed all the things that go through our heads. It's 47 pages long.
Oh my God.
And I've divided it up into sections like the extra mental load when you go on holiday, or when it's a kid's birthday party, or Christmas, or anything like that. Like the shit that we all think about.
Fucking genius.
As women, right?
Yeah.
It's £8 available on my website, notsosmugnow.com. It has been, I'd go as far as to say it's gone viral.
That is a genius.
I know. I mean, honestly, it's just a list of the shit. And even things like have sex is on there, yeah, because that becomes another to-do.
Well, you got
to
do it.
Well, sex is like going to the gym. It's like you never really feel like it, but you're always glad when it's done.
Yeah, that is so brilliant.
That's obviously, I'm referring to people who are married with kids.
Yeah, sort of me at the moment is quite,
yeah, no,
it's quite different.
For you. I sort of, we've had a conversation by the bins, yeah, and I know it's very different. For
sometimes
you.
It feels the opposite, actually, when I'm like, I'm really up for it. And at the end, I'm like, oh, why did I do that?
You see, whenever happy, never happy.
That's
anyway, yeah, go by the Mental Load List, it's brilliant, and there's an editable version so you can make it round.
I'm gonna link all of that below, but I just say thank you so much. And I'm also just I might get a little bit teary actually. Fucking hell, where's that come from?
Why are you crying?
I'm just really there's a lot to do with sobriety when your life really, really opens up and you do meet really incredible people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're just one of the people who's walked into my life with with real like purpose, and it means a lot.
I would cry, but I have a piece of coal where my heart is because of all my trauma, but I want you to know that,
yeah,
that is literally the nicest thing. But sobriety is the best thing that has ever happened to me because of the people. I didn't know that,
yeah,
drunks were so fucking cool, but we really are.
We're the fucking coolest. I just really want to express my gratitude.
Oh, thank you
so much. It's really, really, truly incredible and absolute inspiration. And I feel very fortunate. So.
Me too, little love fest. Mutual love fest. Thank you for having me.
Oh, good luck.
If you or anyone you know is struggling or needs help with the issues discussed on Why Do You Think You've Got No Friends, please visit the podcast bio where you will find contact numbers with people readily available to give support. Please get in touch with your stories at either contact@whydoyouthink.com or on Instagram at Emily_Lang_UK or @whydoyouthinkpodcast. To have your story or your thank you letter read on the podcast, please put survivor story or thank you letter either at the top or in the subject line. We really want to hear from you. We don't care if it's a catastrophe story or a small win from your week, your favourite place, person or thing. We are here for all of it. Don't forget to rate and subscribe, and I'll talk to you soon.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.